originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And happy to have you along for the next hour on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and everybody tuning in worldwide on our website. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, back together again for a brand new edition of Trainer Talk. And we're coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And JT, this show's been going on for quite some time, and it's always fun when we can have somebody in studio with us. And that's the case with our guest here tonight.
Yeah, that's great. I was very happy to hear that our guest was coming in. And first of all, we go back a long ways. Our hair was much darker, but he's a great guy. And, we've had some fun together over the years, and certainly happy that he's moved to Kentucky now.
Yeah, somebody who made his mark on the West Coast, and of course you'll remember the name California Chrome. He'll be forever tied to that horse because his name is Alan Sherman, and he was part of that horse and that a magical run back in 2014 with his father Art. And Alan now going out on his own. He has relocated to Central Kentucky, living in Lexington, and looking to begin that training career very quickly, actually. And it's nice to have him in studio with us today. Nice to see you, bud.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
How often do you go back and watch California Chrome's races?
Oh, all the time. It doesn't get old, I tell you. The Derby was, whenever you need to pick me up, you just watch that race, and it changes your attitude a little bit. But he was so... such a fun horse to be around, and it was a pleasure, and I was blessed to be able to be a part of him.
And now you get to be back here in Central Kentucky. He's standing stud over at TaylorMade. Do you go spend a little time with him out there, too?
Oh, absolutely. I go see him as much as possible, weather permitting. But, yeah, he looks great. I was talking to Frank Taylor the other day, and, I mean, his legs look so good. It looks like he can go into training tomorrow. He looks so good.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I love your California Chrome vest, too, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's got the red California, the white chrome underneath it. Neat logo.
Yeah, yeah. He's a fantastic horse, and he's done a little traveling, which is cool. Been able to follow him on Twitter as he makes his worldly ventures.
Yeah, he's got one more year in Chile, and then he'll be back here for good, I think. I'm not sure what the plans are after that, but he does have one more breeding season in Chile.
How much input do you and Dad have now that he's retired and at stud, or is that all left up to the farm?
That's all left up to TaylorMade. They know obviously better than we do about all that. So,
who made the call to send him to TaylorMade when he retired?
Well, they had bought Steve Coburn out.
And, that's right. That's
yeah,
right.
So they had bought 30% of it. So that was the decision.
It was
right
an
there.
Easy call.
Yeah,
it was an easy call. What's your favorite California Chrome moment?
Winning the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. And second would probably be the World Cup. Very proud, you know, the Americans won the race. And just, it was a proud moment.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I'll always remember about Chrome, when we went out to cover the Santa Anita Derby, and this is, of course, before he wins the Kentucky Derby, and the turn of foot that he displayed that day, just running away from horses. When Victor said go, he just exploded, right? And he opened up and drew off and really just crushed the field that day. Did the same thing in the Kentucky Derby. And for me, it's that turn of foot and seeing him just glide away from the field that was something I'll always remember about him.
Yeah, he did have an amazing turn of foot. he showed that in quite a few races, the Pacific Classic. There were so many of them that, I mean, when Victor asked him, he would just take off, you know, and it was an amazing, I wish he would have done that in the Breeders' Cup instead of and seen where he was. But I think if he would have kicked on at the quarter pole, I think he would have won the Breeders' Cup Classic too.
What do you think made him so good?
His heart and his will. I've never been around a smarter horse and a horse that loved to train and loved to run as much as him. He was an amazing horse. I mean, one time he got cast in the stall and he was pinned up against a wall, and Jude, you know, horses will get scared and start thrashing. He just laid there and looked at us like, okay, come on, get me off the wall.
Help me here. Give me a hand.
Yeah, and we went in there, pulled him off the wall, and he got right up. And, you know, he was just an exceptionally smart horse, or is.
Don't you think the good horses are mostly smart horses? Or?
I agree, yeah. A lot of them have the talent, but to have the brains and the will and to go along with that, it's just made him an outstanding racehorse.
It's like awareness, I think. They are aware of what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you know?
They all have it to a certain degree, but some of them really know their business and they really want to participate in it. And that's when you get that really special horse. When they know what they're supposed to do and they want to do it, that's the perfect combination.
Yeah, I think that goes with all athletes too. You know, there's been a lot of great athletes out there that didn't have the will or the desire to do it. And the ones that do, those are the greatest of all time that you see.
When did you and Dad first know that you had a special horse with him?
I think after he won the King Glorious at Hollywood Park, the last stake race at Hollywood Park. We always knew he can run, but after he won that race, it was like, this is a special one, you know.
Did you know he had that kind of heart at that point?
You know, the first time we worked him a half mile, we worked him, he was 2 years old, and we worked him with a three-year-old of Owen Hardy's, and Chrome just, that was our first time really getting him on the bridle and saying, okay, let's see how he works, and he just demolished this three-year-old, and I was like, all right, this horse, he's going to, he'll do, you know, he's going to be a nice cowbred.
Yeah, that's the other thing that, you know, you think back on his run leading up to the Kentucky Derby, and all of the knockers were saying, look, this horse doesn't have any kind of pedigree. There's no way he's going to go a mile and a quarter. He doesn't have a pedigree to be a good racehorse. There's no way. But you and Dad knew that you were onto something special. So put me in your shoes. You're hearing all of that negativity out there surrounding him, and all he does is just continue to show up and run a big race. What was that like for you? Do you tune that out?
Yeah, you kind of tune it out. You know, a lot of the naysayers, they don't know the horse like we do, you know. Like I said, the horse had a ton of heart, and we knew that. Distance, you know, you don't know if he can go a mile and a quarter until you're running the Derby. I mean, you don't ever get a chance to do it, so nobody knows. So,
right.
But he just, the horse could, you could do whatever you want with him. Put him on the lead, sit back. He would always relax the first part of his races. He wasn't the kind of horse that was really on the bridle, pulling the jock around there. You know, he would do whatever you asked of him. And I think that helped him, you know, get that further distance as well.
Yeah, there's nothing like being able to rate.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you see, well, Baffert's having trouble right now with that horse Coliseum because uh-huh. He just wants to run off. He's a very talented horse, but you know, he's always...
Yeah, he won't turn it off.
He won't turn it off. And if you get a horse that can turn it off and then turn it on and then turn it off and then turn it on, that's another sign of a really good horse. When they can make a couple of runs in a race, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Can you put into words what it's like to win the Kentucky Derby? For those of us who never have, by the way.
Yeah, it's, you know, growing up in racing my whole life, that's the one race you really want to win, you know. Like, win the Kentucky Derby, I consider it a great career, you know. And winning that race, I think I cried for about an hour after the race, just at the barn. It was, like, unbelievable to me for us to win that race. And like you said, I go back and watch it still to this day. You know, if you have a bad day or something, you go turn the race on and it picks your head up, that's for sure.
How special was it to do it with Dad, too?
Oh, that's awesome for my dad to get a horse like that at this stage in his career, you know, was very special. And for him to be able to enjoy all that, and he got to, you know, go all over the world as we both did. And but he did it in his late 70s. You know, obviously I did it in the 40s when I was in my 40s. But it was great for him to be able to do that. And, you know, he's won over 2,500 races now, been doing it for a lot of years. And to me, people like that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He really seemed to enjoy it. I mean, I've known your dad a long time, and you have too. But, you know, he's had a tough career sometimes, and maybe not the best horses, but man, the smile, you could not wipe the smile off of his face. I mean, he was just smiling round the clock. Anytime anybody walked up to him, and he was always so gracious with them and took the time. And I think he really appreciated it more than a lot of people would, you know, these days. I mean, the fact that he was around back in the day and went through all the things that he did, the ups and downs of being a trainer, and then finally getting that, you know, I mean, I think it was just so special for him. And I enjoyed that as much as I did watching the horse, watching your dad have a great time.
Yeah, it was very special just to see the joy and everything that he got to go through with that horse. It was an amazing run. Who knows? Maybe we'll be able to do it again.
Yeah, wouldn't that be special?
Yeah.
How often does your dad go back and watch those races?
I'm sure he goes back and watches them. Yeah.
Talking with Alan Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. He will begin his training career. Actually, it's already started. You moved back here to Kentucky, as I mentioned. You're now living in Lexington. You've had one horse run in your name this year. That was back in January at Santa Anita, and you're looking for more. But you told me before we started the program, for you, it would be great if you could just have a smaller select stable, quality over quantity. Is that the goal?
Yeah, that would be a best case scenario. To, you know, instead of having 50 or 60 horses, I'd rather have 10 or 15 decent horses, you know, be able to travel around. And, you know, we've done a lot of traveling with horses, so I think we kind of got that dialed in as far as horses going to other tracks and running and, you know, how to manage them and all that stuff. So that would be the best case scenario, would be to get about 10 to 15 decent horses. And, I'd rather do that. I've had 100 horses before, you know, me and my dad and my brother, and it's great. You know, the money's great and everything, but, I just, at this stage, I'd rather have a smaller, better quality than quantity.
So do you find that might be more enjoyable?
I think so. You know, you have time to spend more, you know, time with the individual horse. You get too many horses, and it's just hard to me, like, I don't know how a lot of guys do it with, you know, a couple hundred horses. I mean, you never even get to see them all, I don't think. You know, it just seems like it would be more headache. You're babysitting a lot with the help and everything else that goes along with it. You don't really get to enjoy the horse itself.
How many horses do you have right now?
We have, in California, we have about 40. We got 10 in Southern California, about 30 in Northern. Here, I've just got a couple right now. I'm going back to the sale in March at OBS and going to buy a few more, and then in April as well.
So the plan will be to be based here in Central Kentucky year-round, train,
yeah.
I guess, what, Churchill, Keeneland?
Churchill, Keeneland, yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, all right. Where are you going to live? Do you got a place picked out yet?
Not yet. My house is for sale right now. When that sells, I'm going to buy something around in Keeneland somewhere, or Lexington rather.
In Keeneland. I like
that. Yeah,
that
would be nice to live in Keeneland, right?
There's a couple nice houses actually in Keeneland.
I'll take that one.
Who's this Californian coming over here wanting to buy all our land? Well, he is Alan Sherman, and as we told you, he is starting that training career. You know, it's funny, when I was going back and I was looking at some of those statistics and numbers, I realized, and this is something I did not know, that you have actually saddled a winner in your name, Alan Sherman, but it came all the way back in 2001. Do you remember that horse?
Yeah, it was at Lone Star.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, the name of the horse.
Scepter Dial.
Yeah.
Is that right? Did I say it right?
Yeah.
How's that?
Wow. On the grass. Yeah.
That's good research.
$20,000 claimer, by the way.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I went there with my wife and my second wife, and we had four or five horses there. We did well. You know, it was fun. We stayed there. All the horses got claimed, and we're like, all right, we did our job. Time to go back home.
Pack it up.
Yeah. So that was 2001. You took a little break, saddled, another horse in 08? Is that what I saw? Does that sound right? You had another horse in your name in 08.
Yeah, that was due to the fact that my dad got a little vacation from the CHRB.
Dear Art, we noticed you've been working very hard lately.
And your kid saddled one horse while you were on vacation.
Yeah.
Just one. I think must you were been, on vacation,
must,
too.
Must have been a very short vacation.
So the goal moving forward is what? What do you want to accomplish?
Oh, boy. It would sure be nice to get on that Derby trail again. That was sure fun. I kind of got addicted to that. but, you know, just to have a solid career, that's all. You know, I'm not looking to move mountains or rewrite the record books. I just want to have a good career and solid family life, and that's it. Be able to take care of my kids and my dog and be happy. That's all.
Well, you've come to the right place.
I agree.
This place is the mecca of horse racing, and there's a lot of people that breed nice horses here. And you get on a little roll, you could really have a nice stable. I think you made a great move.
You mentioned picking out these horses in March, Alan. That means two-year-old in training sales.
Correct.
So at that point, they're pretty much ready to run for the most part. You'll do a little bit with them, get them right to the track. That has to help too, right, where you're not necessarily buying yearlings and having to wait and develop them and break them and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, that helps. I do enjoy buying the yearlings more so than the two-year-old trainings. The two-year-old in training, at least you know if the horse can run or not. But that being said, you hope after you buy them and you get them home and start training on them that they continue to train as well as they were going up to that sale, because they get chewed on pretty good getting ready for that sale, you know, which is no fault to anybody. That's people like to see their horses working nine that they're going to buy, you know. But me personally, I'd rather buy yearlings and be able to develop them and get them ready myself. But right now, I think the opportunity to get rolling quicker would be to go to the two-year-old in training sales.
You bring up a great point about the horses that work quick at those sales. Those are typically the horses that sell the best and bring the most money for their consigners. So that's why everybody wants to see those flashy, fast workouts. Not always considered to be the best thing for the horse, though. So when you're looking at those horses, you see a horse go really fast like that. Are you the type of guy that says, oh, I have to have that horse? Or are you the one that says, all right, let's hold off a little bit and let's see how this horse comes out of that workout and go from there?
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with how they do it. I mean, you get the rider that's whipping and driving on them, and they're asking them to go faster than they'll ever have to go the rest of their lives. You know, you're asking these horses to go in 10. You know, when are they going to have to go in 10 in a race? Never.
Yeah. Well, you were a jockey. You were an exercise rider. You know, if you had been out there on one of my horses one morning and you worked them their first 8th and 10, I would probably strangle you when you came back.
Exactly.
You would have missed the Derby completely.
I'd have missed Tiggerillo.
You'd have missed Tiggerillo. You're a big Southern California winner. You're coming out party at Del Mar. But yeah, I mean, that's what I don't understand. And the fact that the trainers get excited about that is bizarre to me, because I don't feel like I'm the Lone Ranger here. Everybody that trains horses would be appalled if their exercise rider worked the horse in 10 or 9 and chain.
Exactly.
They would absolutely, and they wouldn't even get convicted of murder because they had a justification.
Yeah.
And then they line up to buy these horses. I don't quite get it.
I don't either. I'd rather see a horse working 10 and change or 11 easy than a horse working 9 and change or 10
all out. Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference in the price too. If you see a horse that you really like that worked like 10 and 3, which is faster than
they're ever going to have to go.
Yeah. I mean, that's when I used to get excited about a 2-year-old, you know, because you've got something there. You know, the horse has some speed anyway, and then you can take it from there. And hopefully they did it nice, under control, you know.
Does pedigree matter as much in a 2-year-old sale as it does for, say, a yearling sale?
I don't think so. I think you get a horse, like I said, they want them to work fast. If they work fast and vetting is the biggest issue. If they vet and work fast and, you know, their legs are going in the right direction, they're going to sell.
Describe your ideal racehorse. If you could create the perfect racehorse that you're going to go to the sale and buy, what's it look like?
Frankel.
Really?
I went and saw Frankel when I was in England, and he was the perfect racehorse, I thought. I mean, everything was going in the right direction. His hip and his neck was proportioned. Everything was, I mean, you looked at that horse and you just said, that is the perfect racehorse.
Frankel.
Good eye.
Yeah, anybody could have picked that horse.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good answer. That's a great answer, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so many trainers will tell us that they're looking for an athlete when they go to the sales. And yeah, pedigree is important, but it's not the most important thing. They're looking for that. And you learned that with California Chrome.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Chrome, he was a beautiful horse. He was put together very well. Offset a little bit in one knee. But when you watch him walk and watch him run, he would walk through it, run through it. And you could see, like, even when you go to the sale and look at these horses, they might be a little offset, might toe in, might toe out. But if they walk through it, or at the 2-year-old trail sales, if they, you know, when you watch them work, if they're not throwing their legs, excuse me, all over the place, you know they're running through that little flaw they have. So, you know, it doesn't bother me if they're a little offset one way or another.
Yeah, every trainer has things that they'll approve because they've dealt with them before and they know. And they also have things that they won't ever buy because they've had to deal with them. So it's a matter of personal taste. It's almost like, you know,
yeah,
picking out a girlfriend or a cigar
or whatever.
Everybody's got their own shtick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd your dad think when you told him you were going to go out on your own?
Oh, he was happy for me. He told me, he said, you got to get out of California. He says, the opportunities just aren't there for us right now. I think they'll be greater here. So it was time, you know, I just turned 50. So it was time to leave the nest, per se. And I didn't really want to stay in California. It's the cost of everything. And I love to fish and hunt. And so yeah. I was like, you know, why not go to the horse capital of the world?
To fish and hunt.
To fish and hunt. Maybe train a few.
Maybe train a couple too. Why not? Alan Sherman, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What are some of the things that you learned in all these years of working alongside your father and your brother Steve that are going to help you now that you start off on your own again?
The main thing is honesty. You have to be honest with your clients. You know, if you have a horse that gets injured or can't run, or, you know, you just have to tell them, you just have to be straightforward with them. And I think people appreciate that. You know, I'm not going to tell you your horse is the next great thing if he can't outrun me. And if he has an issue, I'm going to let you know. And, you know, because when you BS people, that doesn't help anybody. You know, you just got to be straightforward with them. And I think that's the biggest asset my dad has. He's not known to, you know, say something to the owner that's not true. He comes right out and tells you, and that's the way I was taught. So,
yeah, yeah, it's black and white. And I mean, in a lot of instances, it is what it is,
yeah,
right? I mean,
there's nothing you can do about it. You know, they're not machines. They're horses. They're going to get hurt. They're going to be slow. They're going to be fast. They're going to stay sound. You know, just the. It's all different. They're all different.
And many trainers will come on the show. And Jude, how many trainers have said it's really important that you find owners that are on the same page as you philosophically, so exactly. that you're both going in the same direction, going for the same goal. So if something like an issue does come up with a horse, you're both on the same page, and you know, okay, we need to back off. We need to
let's do what's right for the horse, and come back in a few months if necessary, and get him over that hump.
Yeah, I think a lot of times trainers have to be educators, especially with people that are new to the business. They have to teach them that, you know, it doesn't always look like California Chrome.
Exactly.
You know, it has its ups and downs, and sometimes you have to be patient. And the more patient you are, the better you do. And it's a learning curve for a lot of people, and you'll have to deal with that now, you know, more, because you're going to be the guy whose name's in the program.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we've had the same clients for years and years, and so that was great. You know, unfortunately, some of them have passed, and you get new clients, and it took a while to get used to them not knowing so much about how we do things, and you know, them asking a lot of questions, which is great, because I got to where I was so used to just calling them and saying, hey, we'll do this, this, and this. And they're like, okay, that's fine. But then you get these newer clients that are like, oh, what do you mean? You know, what do we got? You know, it's just, you got to explain it more, which is fine. I don't mind doing it. But for a long time, we didn't have to worry about it. You know, we had great old clients, and we still do have some of them, but it's a new era out there. You know, there's a lot more available information available for the owners now. I mean, before, you'd call them when their horses were in, and that was pretty much it. Now they got condition books right in front of them, and they'll say, well, what do you think we should run this horse here or there?
Every trainer loves that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an extra $20 a day for people.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Alan Sherman is with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Really just getting started on the program here today. We're about halfway through. We're going to get to a short commercial break here momentarily. Then we'll come back and we'll talk more about Alan. We'll talk about his background as a rider and that story you brought up about Del Mar. I want to go down that road too. We'll do that when we come back here. This is Trainer Talk. It's presented by Fasig Tipton. Stay with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, V.E. Day. After winning three in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, V.E. Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes V.E. Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be too close to call!
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, V.E. Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Good Samaritan, the last great son of Harlan's Holiday. A debut winner at Saratoga, followed by 14 consecutive graded stakes performances. A grade two winner on dirt and turf.
Good Samaritan to the Breeders' Cup.
Good Samaritan has taken the lead and he's pulling away.
Out of the family of Sky Mesa, Bernstein, and Champion Outstandingly. The last great son of Harlan's Holiday is only at Windstar Farm.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're coming to the top of the stretch, and California Chrome makes his move for the lead. It is California Chrome on the outside. Samrat runs at him with the gate pole. California Chrome is pulling away. California Chrome into the final furlong. He's got a five-length lead on his competition. It is California Chrome in front. And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby. Commanding Curve was second. And then came Danza in third. The final time, 2 minutes, 3.66 seconds.
Well, what a way to welcome you back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Larry Colmus with the call of the Kentucky Derby back in 2014. California Chrome wearing the roses that day. He would do it again 2 weeks later in the Preakness Stakes, taking home the Black Eyed Susans before coming up just a little bit short in the Belmont when he went for the Triple Crown.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Alan Sherman, his dad Art, brother Steve, they were all together as a team with this particular horse, and Alan is in studio with us here today on Trainer Talk and kind of sharing his thoughts of California Chrome and talking about his new venture, going out on his own, training horses in his name. And he has started that process already. We're going to talk more about that in the second half of the program. Mike Pennant, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. If you did miss any portion of this show, well, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows, horseracingradio.net, and follow us on social media for all the updates as well. That's at HRRN on Twitter. Alan, I started the show by asking you how many times you have watched that particular race and some of California Chrome's biggest races. There were many more besides just that race and the Preakness. He had the Dubai World Cup. But to hear it again right now, it has to kind of send chills down your spine,
yeah,
right?
It does. I got goosebumps. And it's always, it always puts a smile on your face, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you said it was maybe the biggest thrill of your career.
Without a doubt, it would be,
right? California Chrome. That moment at Churchill Downs beneath the Twin Spires. The Preakness Stakes was also pretty special to see him pull off that second leg and now know that you had an opportunity to go for a Triple Crown.
Yeah, the Preakness Stakes was great. The people in Baltimore at Pimlico, they know how to treat you, boy. They had drivers for you, parties. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, we made the most of the whole Chrome experience, that's for sure.
You were pretty excited after that race, too, and we were there to cover it on HRN, and here's the way it sounded right after Chrome crossed the finish line in Baltimore.
Alan, congratulations. Just won the Preakness.
Oh, that's awesome. So awesome. Can't even believe it. What a horse.
Keeps digging in every time.
What a horse. Yeah!
Guys, that's a jubilant Alan Sherman.
What was that?
We get a little excited.
Just a tad.
Great radio, though. Great radio. Talk about emotion, right? I mean, it just pours out of you. You talked about crying for about an hour back at the barn after you won the Derby. I mean, that's just a whole different feeling when he wins the Preakness, right?
Yeah, you know, and just knowing you're that much closer to the Triple Crown was amazing. You know, just to have a shot at winning the Triple Crown. You know, I mean, you see a lot of horses that win the Derby, lose the Preakness. I mean, majority of them do. But to have that chance to win the Triple Crown, which at that point hadn't been done in 30-something years, whatever it was.
Yeah, 36 or, yeah.
Yeah. And just to have the opportunity to be able to try and do that. And like I said, the Preakness is another huge race in that you grow up wanting to win, and to do it was just a lot of fun.
I remember your hospitality at the Belmont Stakes. You and your dad were so kind to us here on the network. It was a really big deal for us to be standing there or sitting there at Belmont Park with a chance to broadcast a Triple Crown, just like it was for you guys trying to win a Triple Crown that year. And you gave us all the access back at the barn, which I'm eternally grateful for. That was so special for us. But for you, when he comes up a little bit short, and he still ran a good race, he wasn't quite California Chrome that day, right? Talk about those emotions after the Belmont Stakes.
Oh, that was a rough one. I wasn't really disappointed with the horse or because he gave his all, you know. He came out of the race, he had been stepped on, and he grabbed his quarter, the horse grabbed his quarter pretty good, and that was bleeding, and he went into the race good, but not like I saw him go into the Derby. He was getting a little tired, you know. He had a tough campaign getting to the Derby, and, you know, the Preakness being 2 weeks later, and then all the traveling, and he ran, what, I think, 7 times as a two-year-old. And so he had a lot of racing going into the Belmont, and I just think if we could have had maybe another week, not that I'm saying they should change it. I would not want to change it at all. But I think if this particular horse had another week or so in between races, it probably would have been a little bit better showing.
Yeah, it's always hard. I mean, you have to run in that confine, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, we've seen a couple horses do it lately, but it doesn't suit every horse. There's no question about it.
Some
horses can't do that, you know. But I thought all in all, he was fantastic. I mean,
absolutely.
You couldn't really ask for any more from him. I mean, it was great. I know it had to be disappointing because everybody wants to win the Triple Crown, and you get greedy, you know. You win the Derby, which you've been waiting for your whole life, and then you have a chance to win the Triple Crown, and you go, oh man, we got this, you know. And then you don't, if you don't win it, which has happened a lot too, it's like, oh, so deflating. And then you kind of know it's kind of getting towards the end of the horse's career, you know what I mean? You've had this fantastic role, and you don't want to see him go, but eventually they all go to stud that are that good, so.
And you know, that's another thing too. If he would have won the Triple Crown, we would have never saw him race as a 5-year-old. You know, his 4-year-old year was basically shot. You know, he went to England and got hurt and got turned out and all that. But I think if he would have won the Triple Crown, I mean, if I owned him, I probably would have too. I've retired him and got that big check and sold them to one of the stud farms. I probably would have done the same thing. But
yeah,
I think maybe it was a blessing not winning the Triple Crown. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? You got to keep them around for a while.
Got to keep them around. Got to travel the world, win the Dubai World Cup. So,
and your guys' run was not controversy free or effortless. You had to put up with a lot of weird stuff during that campaign.
Yeah, there was some tension with the owners, between the two owners, and we tried to manage that the best we could, you know. And I think managing the horses is the easy part. Managing the owners and the help and everything, I think that's tougher than training the horses, actually.
Well, your dad was so good at that.
He was.
He was outstanding. He's just such a mellow guy. He reminds me a lot of my own father. Just very mellow guys, you know. And he handled that with aplomb. He never got flustered by it, or he just kept concentrating on the horse and not worrying about all the junk going on over here on the left. You know. So I mean, he really did a masterful job of maintaining focus and doing everything for the horse and not, you know, getting involved in the other stuff.
Yeah, that was, you know, he does a great job at that. He's really down to earth person, doesn't get too excited about much. Although he has whooped my butt a few times growing up.
I can't imagine you ever needed that.
I know. Can you imagine that?
St. Allen with us here on Trainer Talk.
But, you know, he's very good with people and with the media and everything. And that which has helped me because he took care of that. I took care of the horse.
You mentioned the four-year-old season and things not going according to plan. After Dubai, he goes to England, and it never worked out for California Chrome. We didn't see him again until the following January, right, when he came back in the San Pasquale mm-hmm. that year. Where were you and Dad on that side of things in terms of going to England? In favor of it? Not in favor of it?
Not in favor of going to England. After he went to Dubai, he ran second. He ran a great race. The horse who won ran the race of his life.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go to England. The horse needed time off. He needed a rest. He went to England. Didn't really care for it back there, you know. They feed different. He lost weight. I went back there and watched him train, and he just didn't really care for the undulating courses. You know, I'd watch him train, and he would, like, check himself sometimes, you know. I was like, I don't think he really likes the undulating. I mean, he liked the turf. On a flat, he was fine, but the up and down and all that, I don't really think he cared for it. And maybe it was a blessing him bruising his foot 2 days before he ran or was supposed to run an Ascot.
Yeah. Yeah, because he probably wouldn't have run well anyway.
Yeah, I don't think he would have. And he was going to have to run against the best turf horses in the world. You know, that Ascot meet is an amazing meet. I think it was probably a blessing we didn't get to run in England.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's the best thing. Don't run.
Yeah.
You know? So, but when he came back here, he just returned like he never left.
Yeah.
Well, when he
yeah,
went
how
to,
remarkable is that?
He went to TaylorMade Farm, and when he went there, you know, after flying back from England and everything, when he got off the plane in Chicago, I felt bad for the horse. You know, he was skinny. I mean, his spirits were good, but he just didn't look that great, you know. And so he went to TaylorMade, and they did a phenomenal job with that horse. When he came back in after he was turned out for 3 months, he looked like a completely different horse. He was big and swelled up, and he just looked fantastic. I was like, yeah, that's the Chrome I know.
You could tell a big difference.
Oh, huge difference, yeah.
Alan Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. We told you in the first half of the program that he is starting his own training career, but of course, California Chrome is such a big part of what his life has been about in this game, along with his father, Art, and his brother, Steve. And it's been that was a magical ride, and hoping for another California Chrome, as he told you in the first half of the program. He'll go to the two-year-old sales, pick out some horses here in March, and we'll see if you can find the next Chrome. I mean, we won't know for a few more years.
Yeah,
but
you never know.
Yeah, you never know where they're going to come from.
That's right.
You know, it's the beauty of
look
this.
Look where he came from.
Yeah, yeah, look where he came from. Obscurity,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was, yeah, he was not supposed to be a good racehorse. Turned out to be, for sure. Let's talk about you a little bit more and your background. Jude mentioned that you were a jockey. Right?
Yep.
Started out as a jockey. Back to the Tiggerello thing for a minute.
Wow, you even remembered the horse's name.
Yeah,
I'm impressed.
Yeah, okay. Tell me this story, because this is where you two kind of cross paths.
Well, I was down at Del Mar. Only one time in my life as a trainer I ever tried to set a horse up to gamble. I had these two clients, Carlos Monk and Mr. Padilla. What the heck was his name? Manny Padilla. And they were caterers for I don't even know if you know this. They were caterers for the studios. Like if they were doing some movie or television or whatever on site somewhere, on location, these guys would cater the food for everybody that was working, the cameramen, the actors, everybody. And that was their business. So I had a lot of show business clients, and they talked to him about the horses because they liked the horses, and they wanted to claim a horse. So they call me, and they come out to the barn and meet me, and we have a little discussion. And they don't have billions of dollars. They want to claim a horse for like 10 or 12. And I said, okay, I'll keep my eyes open. And then one day they called me and said, we want to claim this horse, Tiggerello. Well, I knew that the horse had a tendon issue and some other things wrong with him. And I said, listen, you know, this horse has some issues. And they said, we don't care. We've talked about it. We really want this horse. I said, all right. So I claimed the horse for him. Came out of the race okay. And then a couple days later, his tendon was kind of warm. And I called him up and I said, listen, the horse's tendon isn't right. You know, I think he needs to be turned out. So they said, that's fine. Just turn him out. Do whatever. So I turned him out. And gave him the time, got his tendon down good, and brought him back in and started getting him ready for Del Mar. So they were all excited about running at Del Mar. That was their favorite track and the whole nine yards. So I run the horse back in a sprint race going, I think it was 7 furlongs, which is tough first time out. But I told my exercise girl rode the horse, Amy Bringhurst. She was apprentice at the time, and I said just let him break out of the gate and let him go as fast as he wants, as far as he wants, and then just wrap up on him. Fine. That was for 12.5. Dropped him in for open 10, and I said take him back, make one run, and we'll see how fit he is. So she did that. So now we come to the big day, and the horse is ready to win, and I got him in 10,000 Calbred, easiest race that you could run in Del Mar at the time. So, and I love him. I mean, he's doing so good.
Yeah.
Right. She gets sick the morning of the race. Her mom calls me. She goes, Amy's throwing up and she won't be able to ride today. Go, oh my God, you're kidding. I was all set to bet. So, Steve was my assistant.
Uh-huh.
And he was a friend of yours.
Yeah.
From Washington.
Grew up together.
Yeah. So, Steve comes to me and he goes, because I told him, I said, Amy can't ride today. So he must have called you or something in the meantime to find out if you were in town or light enough to ride.
I was actually staying with him.
Oh, were you?
Yeah,
okay. So he got a hold of you somehow. So he comes running up to me. I'm watching a horse work, and he goes, my friend Alan Sherman's here from Washington. He's won some races, you know, up at Long Acres, and you should put him on that horse today because he's got the bug and everything. I said, can he ride? He goes, oh, yeah, he's great, you know. I said, okay. So I put him on, right? I had like 15 jockey agents ask me about riding the horse. And I said, no, I've got a rider. Well, who's riding him? I said, Alan Sherman. And they go, who?
Yeah, the price just doubled, by the way.
So, right.
So they didn't know who he was. And it was suited me fine because I was going to bet. So I was going to get a good price. So Alan comes out in my silks. The partnership didn't even have any silks. He's wearing my silks. And you know, I said, this horse is ready to run. He's ready to win. So it's up to you, you know. And he just drew off by 3 or 4.
He horse won, one, he won one, pretty easy.
One pretty easy. And I walked around with $8,000 in my pocket.
Wow.
That was a great. And
How much did you get out of that?
10% of the purse. Yeah,
probably. He probably was walking around, though, like he won the Derby that day.
Yeah, that was the first horse I rode in Southern California, and it won. So
no kidding.
Yeah. Wow.
So he talks about watching the Derby all the time. So that night I went to one of the bars in Del Mar, and I must have watched that race, I don't know, 15 times. They played the races on a loop, so I had to wait for the whole card to finish before I get to see it again. But I sat right in front of the TV and just watched it and watched it and watched it with that $8,000 throbbing in my pocket. It was fantastic. It was a great day. It was it was so much fun. And the fact that nobody knew who he was, I loved even more, you know. So
yeah, that actually got me jump-started in Southern California riding, you know. And then after that, I showed up at Charlie Whittingham's barn at 4 in the morning every day. And finally, he started putting me on some workers and ended up riding some horses for him. And actually ended up winning about 20 races for him.
Wow.
Yeah. I got to work Ferdinand, Judge Angelucci, Goodbye Halo, Strode's Creek. You know, a lot of good horses for him.
Yeah, so he was no stranger to good horses when he got California Chrome, because he'd done a lot of different things in his career. I mean, Tigarillo helped him that day, but that wasn't one of the better horses that he ever rode.
Yeah. What was it like riding for him?
For Charlie?
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. You know, every time you rode a horse for him, you knew it was going to be ready to run. He wouldn't say a lot in the paddock except keep him out of trouble. That's all he asked.
Yeah.
You know, if you kept him out of trouble and the horse wasn't good enough to win, so be it. If you got in trouble and he should have won. Well, you heard about that too.
I was looking up your statistics here on Equibase as you were talking. Were you A.B. Sherman? Was that
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. A.B. Sherman. So it's showing you with 80 career wins. Is that right?
That's about right.
In the saddle? Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Where's all the greatest stakes wins, though, man?
The hamburgers got to him before the graded stakes.
I rode horses that went on to win graded stakes. I rode Delegant. He won the San Juan Capistrano. That was a son of Dahlia.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a really nice horse. I think that might have been DeSormo's first grade one win, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you might be right. I think
really?
He might have told us that the other day.
Well, he has you to thank for doing all the work and getting the horse ready, right?
Yeah, and getting too fat.
What was your riding weight?
You know, I was pretty good the first couple years I rode. I was young. I started when I was 17 and quit when I was 20. But once I turned like 19 years old, I swelled up. I don't know why, but, you know, if I went out and ate something before, it wouldn't make much of a difference, maybe pull a pound or two. But now when I went out and ate, like, okay, now I got to pull 5 pounds, you know, and it just got tough and doing all the stupid things that some jockeys do to lose weight. You know, I did that for about a year and I had enough. I just couldn't keep the weight off.
Yeah, it's just not healthy to do it that way either. You know, that's another debate that's brought up from time to time in the industry about jockeys and the riding weights now, and should they increase them a few pounds and let the guys be and the girls be just a little bit heavier and have that natural weight on the horse as opposed to having to implement with the lead or whatever it is in the saddle towel. Where do you land on that? Should there be a little higher weight for the jockeys?
Even if the jockeys do gain 4 more pounds or 5 more pounds, that's not their natural weight. They're going to be fighting. Once they gain that 5 pounds, they're going to be fighting to stay at that weight as well. You know, I don't think it hurts the horses to carry a few extra pounds. You know, 124 or something should probably be a good weight for horses. Run 20, 124, something like that. I don't think they need to run with 130, and I don't think they need to run with 112 either.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere right in the middle there.
Yeah.
Probably about the sweet spot.
Yeah.
The sweet spot. When did you decide that you wanted to be a jockey? Right on, early on?
When I was growing up, I told everybody I was going to win 5 Kentucky Derbies. You know, that was...
Well, you got 4 more to go.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was a jockey for 24 years.
Swaps.
So, yeah. Yeah, so I grew up always wanting to be a jockey.
Was he excited when you told him you wanted to?
Yeah, he wasn't real excited when I quit school to do it. I took my GED and quit school, and because, you know, having a size 9 shoe, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it for very long. So I wanted to start and do it for as long as I could.
How long did you ride?
About 3 years.
When you stepped away from riding, did you go right into training, or was there a transition period where you did something else?
No, I pretty much went right into helping my dad. You know, I didn't get my trainer's license for a while, but I was helping my dad along with some other guys. I'd go down, like even when I wasn't riding, I'd go down to L.A. every summer. We'd go to Hollywood Park and then get them ready for Del Mar. And while I was down there, I'd still work horses for Charlie and stuff. And so I always, whenever Charlie was around, I always tried to go over there and get on horses for him. And he was, you know, more than happy to put me on horses. And so we started going to Del Mar in mid-80s. My brother went down there. We were on that far barn by the chicken barn down there, the 3 or 4 stalls there.
Yeah,
that was the first barn we had. But, you know, we grew up basically every summer. If I wasn't at Del Mar, I was on the fairs, which Del Mar was a lot funner.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't involved with horse racing right now?
I'd be guiding you out in the woods hunting.
can you actually take the shot for me, too? Because after what happened this year, I think I need somebody to pull the trigger, too, and aim for me. That might help. We're going to get you down to the farm. You have to come down and do a little deer hunt down at the farm.
Absolutely. Would love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, I told him he can't go killing all the big deer, though. He's got to leave one or two for me. Yeah. Where'd you used to hunt?
In Tennessee, actually, growing up. My mother's from Tennessee, and all her family's there. And we would spend every summer growing up and going to Tennessee, and that's kind of where I got the bug. My uncle was head of the fishing game down there. And
no kidding.
Taught me a lot about it. So
yeah.
I just loved it and still do.
Alan Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Just a few minutes left, Alan. Always like to wrap it up by asking trainers to tell us something about them that maybe people aren't as familiar with. We talked about the hunting side of it. What else are you interested in hobby-wise?
Hobby-wise, I love to golf. Enjoy hunting, fishing, and golfing. I beat Frank Taylor.
Is Frank Taylor any good?
Not really. No, we're okay. You know, we'll shoot mid-80s, 90, something like that.
That's pretty
good. We just have fun.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll have to get you out golfing, too. We'll do that,
absolutely,
too. Yeah, he'll beat me for sure. Jude's golfed with me before. He knows. That's like dropping down in class big time when you play with me.
You never know where the ball is going to go.
So we talked about this in the first half of the program, going out on your own. Let's just wrap it up this way. You're going out on your own, looking to pick out horses at the March sales. And when people are listening to this now, maybe potential owners that are tuning in, what do you want them to know about Alan Sherman, your philosophy, and where you want to take this thing?
Well, we you know, always growing up, training these horses as individuals. You know, they're not machines. They don't all can't stand the same training program. You've got to treat each horse as an individual. We've bought some really good horses. We've claimed some, you know, we've claimed horses that went on to win grade one. So, you know, we've got a good eye for a horse. Take our time, do the right thing by the horse, and you know, if you do the right thing by the horse, it'll help you out in the long run. It might take you a little longer to get to the races or whatever, but and eventually it's better off for everybody involved, the horse, the owners, and everyone.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Patience is everything, and you having worked for Charlie Whittingham, you certainly learned that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the number one answer that we get when I'll ask somebody about their philosophy and the most important thing to being a successful horse trainer. The one word that everybody always seems to throw out is patience.
Yeah. And, you know, this day and age, you know, people, they want to get the quick results. It's not cheap to train a horse. Let's be honest. You know, it's expensive. By the time you buy the horse, train the horse, you've got a lot of money invested in that horse, and you'd like to see some return. But if you push them to get that return, you're never going to get it, and you're going to end up with a hurt horse, and nobody's going to win from that.
Yeah, well, he's one of the nicest guys that you're going to find in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He's Alan Sherman. He's been our guest for the past hour here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Give him a call. Send him some horses. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. Who knows? Maybe you're the owner of the next California Chrome, and you can go down that road with Alan one more time. Alan, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks
for
being here.
You could reach me at shermanracing@gmail.com.
shermanracing@gmail.com.
Easy to remember.
Yeah, very easy to remember. Maybe we'll get him a website, too. We'll get them all doctored up with a website and everything.
There you go.
It'd be good. Pictures of deer, pictures of horses, pictures of California Chrome. Appreciate it, brother. Thanks
all
for being
right,
here.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Good stuff, JT. We're back next week. Another brand new Trainer Talk. The beat goes on.
We hope so.
Yeah. Lord willing.
Lord willing.
Lord willing. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, for Jude Feld, for our special guest, Alan Sherman, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.